This is The Car Show with Lisa Christensen on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Is getting clearer. The sunset sighs and slowly disappears. These trinkets once were treasure. Life changes like the weather. You grow up, grow old, or you hit the road around here.
It's not my show, so I'm playing the whole song. Let it go.
So I drive.
That's John Bon Jovi.
With my plastic dashboard, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. I know. I like what he's driving. Hey, hey. There we go. Okay. We're off and running. Thank you, Jimmy. It's Ken sitting in for Lisa, who's finally enjoying some time off. Lisa Christensen, host of The Car Show, is off this Saturday. Chad Kennemy has pulled up a chair. Chad, always good to see you.
Good to be here. Thank you very much.
Chad's our regular fill-in whenever Lisa's not available. Does a great job. How's your summer been going?
So far, so good. Got no complaints. Any summer is a good one as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. How do you handle the heat? We've had a lot of heat waves.
It's a challenge. I'm glad the AC in my car is working tip-top. I'll tell you that much. I don't mean to toot my own horn.
Chad's got all kinds of experience when it comes to being a mechanic and answering your phone calls and all kinds of automobile issues. Call away at 514-790-0800. We will start with Alan in Côte Saint-Luc. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
What do you want to do? You want to talk to Chad about EVs, right?
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't have one yet, but I'm figuring it won't be long because my car is a 2016 Honda Civic, but it hasn't got a lot of kilometers. But I'm figuring soon I'm going to have to replace it. And I'm wondering, do you know if all the EVs work on the same voltage and the chargers, are they the same? Like if I bought a charger for the first or for one EV, would I be able to plug in another brand?
That really, really depends on, there's a lot of factors there. It really depends on the type of vehicle. Now, right now they're trying to standardize the charging platforms so that they're usable with multiple makes of vehicles. But let me ask you, what's your time frame? What are you thinking? When do you think you might start to replace your car?
I figure about a year, approximately.
I mean, a 2016 Civic, you've got at least another 5-6 years. Just saying. But if you're not happy with the burning fuel with the prices these days, I understand. I would look. They are fairly standard at the time. At this moment, things can change quickly, especially with electric vehicles changing so quickly and battery technology evolving the way it has been. I would not make a purchase or do any installations until you have a model that you want specifically. Do your homework and then make sure you get the right one because things can change really quickly.
Yes, because if I keep my car for another five years, I'm going to probably need to buy new tires because I got original and my snow tires are original.
Mm-hmm.
I know already I have snow tires on steel rims, so I don't have to do a switchover every year. But already one rim is badly rusted. I'm going to have to either replace it or repair it.
Okay.
So I'm considering what I have to invest in the next down the road. So it may be worthwhile. I can probably get a good price for my car because I don't have a lot of kilometers on it.
Absolutely.
But it's just the age of it, and like I said, tires eventually and whatever.
So when you're ready to make a purchase and you've selected a model, inquire at that time. Things can change, so it'd be terrible for you to make a purchase now and then be disappointed later.
And I have one more question. Is anybody considering manufacturing a car with solar cells on the roof instead of a sunroof, which I never use? So then if it's outside at any point, and it's sunny, the batteries would charge automatically from the sun
These do exist to a certain extent, but they're still in the experimental phase because there's not enough surface area to really produce any significant voltage. It takes a lot of voltage to run an EV. So the little panel, even if you covered the whole roof, it's not going to be enough to supplement it unless you left it for a long time. So plugging in for the next foreseeable future is still going to be necessary.
Right, right. Because right now I'm capable of putting a plug because I have my own garage space right outside my house. I mean, in the garage. But if I go to a condo apartment or something, I'm sure there's going to be a thing about who's going to put in the electricity, who's going to pay for the electricity of the charger, and so on and so forth.
All right. Well, things to consider, Alan, when it comes to making that next purchase, right?
Yes, absolutely.
All right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. Have a good day, guys.
You too. 514-790-0800. If you have a car question, Chad is here to answer it. He's filling in for Lisa today. I'm Ken Connors. Yeah, 1012. Yeah, I have a friend who's a big advocate, a big fan of tire maintenance and the importance of rotating your tires. How much impact does that have on the lifespan of a tire?
Very significant impact. It really can extend the life of your tires significantly. And don't forget wheel alignments as well. These are all things that play into how your tires will wear. But you should be doing a tire rotation, depending on your mileage, I would say at least every 5,000 kilometers. If you can do it with every oil change, more is better. Especially if you have a front-wheel drive or a rear-wheel drive specifically, as opposed to an all-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't place enough importance on tire rotations. Plus, it gives you a good opportunity to take the wheels off, look at your brakes, give a quick look around. It never hurts.
514-790-0800 to call in now and get your car question answered from the text line at 514-800. Morning, guys. My steering wheel is constantly shaking. What's the problem here?
Could be one of many in the city, but
start with the roads.
I would say that look, tires and rims would be the number one concerns. If it's constantly shaking, it really depends at what speed. If it's at all speeds, more than likely you've got a bad tire or a bent rim. If it's at a certain speed on the highway, say around 100 kilometers, not that anybody should ever go faster than that, it's probably a balancing issue. If it's while you're braking and you're feeling that, could be an issue with your brakes. It really depends on when the shake is occurring. If it's only in the steering wheel, you're not really feeling it in the seat of your pants, it could be an indication that's more towards the front of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
I can narrow that down, but without more details, it's tough to say. But suffice it to say, it's something that you want to get checked out fairly quickly to avoid any potential danger or problems.
All right, Bob, I hope that was some help for you on the text line. Just before we break, and back to Alan and his thoughts about going electric. Do you have any information or have you come across anything about, is it an issue in terms of our climate, in terms of these batteries and performing well and taking a longer time to charge, possibly in the cold weather?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also how much you get out of the battery. So general rule of thumb, you will lose about 40% of the charge or the distance that you can achieve with a vehicle, depending on the temperature. So as it gets colder, especially up here, take whatever advertised number that the manufacturer has given you, cut it in half if you want to be realistic. In terms of charging time, yeah, you can't really charge a freezing battery as efficiently as you can one that's at a specific temperature it's designed for.
Do you think these car companies, though, are sort of taking this into consideration for the markets where there's a colder climate?
They do, but there's certain things that they just can't get around with the technology yet. We're on the brink of making some new headway with new battery technology and solid-state batteries, which are going to change the game, so to speak, but still there's always going to be some kind of limitations due to temperatures.
All right. That's Chad Kennemy. He's in for Lisa. If you have a question about your car or a car, let us know at 514-790-0800. Eugene, we're going to talk to you in a second here about your 2016 Prius.
Now, the Car Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Mm-hmm. Good morning. Ken in for Lisa. Just really quarterbacking here and answering the phones. Chad Kennemy is taking your calls. He's been in many times when Lisa's needed the day off, and we're happy to have him. Let's go right back to the phone here and bring in Eugene. Eugene, good morning.
Good morning to you all, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Tell us about this Prius, this 2016 Prius.
Okay, so it's a Prius V 2016. Great car. And I was in the garage the other day to clean up the brakes and change the parts, and I noticed I have some rust underneath. And I parked the car in the second level of the complex where I live, and there's quite a bit of humidity, so maybe because of that, I get the rust. I'm looking for a garage that can apply some stuff, to correct the rust spots. Or what do you suggest?
Well, let me ask you, Eugene, where is the rust on the car? Is it like on the rocker panels? Is it underneath?
It's underneath. Everything is underneath. Nothing on the, like, outside.
Have you done any rust proofing on this Prius yet?
No, not yet.
You'll want to check, because that's a good option for you at this point if the rust is not too severe. You'll want to check with the manufacturer to see if they recommend, because I know with a lot of hybrid and electric vehicles, they actually don't recommend the rust proofing.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, I mean, ultimately, depending on the severity of the rust, the first thing you'll want to do is assess that. You may actually have some paint work or something to do to get rid of the rust. No point putting oil on top of the rust. You're going to want to take care of the rust first and then get it treated so as to prevent it from reoccurring. In terms of a shop that I would recommend, I don't actually have a shop top of mind at the moment. It's one of those things where you have to do your homework. You got to call around. You got to get different quotes. I know it's annoying. It's a chore, but it's one that you'll reap the benefits of once you've done it. Because obviously a Prius, a 2016, they're great cars. It's going to last a long time. It's a potentially not, well, it's a, you'll have to probably put some money into it, but it'll be worth it in the long run. But unfortunately, there's no way or getting around that homework that you have to do. It's like buying a house. It's like buying a car. It's like anything.
Mm. Well, usually I keep cars for a very long period of time. Mm-hmm. So, I don't mind investing and getting the reward later down the road.
Yeah, you could, do like a lot of people these days, check out the Google reviews and... make sure you check a couple of options, get a couple of quotes. I would say start with a body shop, though, as opposed to a rust-proofing place. So take it to a body shop, have them assess it, get a couple of different quotes. They shouldn't be charging you for those. And then see. And a lot of body shops will actually do a rust-proofing as well afterwards. So that might be another option for you, save you some time.
Yes, greatly appreciate it.
Good luck, sir.
Thanks, Eugene.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. 1025 from the text line. I'm pretty sure I have a faulty starter. Can you explain what is usually the cause of a faulty starter?
Well, there's many. It depends on the age of the vehicle. Obviously, you can only use any part on a car so many times before it fails. Oftentimes, there's a starter solenoid that isn't engaging and then therefore not powering the motor itself. It could be something as simple as a bad connection. Old-fashioned mechanic work and investigation and diagnostic would be the key, because it may not even be the starter. It may be the relay for the starter. It could be an ignition problem. It could be battery cables. They're short on details in terms of what type of vehicle and the mileage and all that.
Right.
But, without any details to give you, I would say go to a garage and see what they have to say.
Right. Is there any preventative maintenance you can do?
I mean, aside from periodic cleaning of the terminals, there's not much you can do unless you're very handy. You're going to take the starter off and maintain it internally, but nobody does that, frankly. Right. No, people don't even rebuild starters anymore. They just replace them. Right. Luckily, depending on most cars, the starter's not terribly expensive. So,
514-790-0800, a full hour of free advice on your car, on your vehicle, whatever you're driving. Like George just called in. George, you want to talk about this Jeep Wrangler?
Yeah, I'm looking into getting a Jeep Wrangler two-door, either the Wrangler or the Sahara. Mm. And I'm looking at a model maybe brand new or maybe 2 years old with the 3.6 Penstar boat motor in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the one with the 32-inch wheels there, to like the big mud wheels. Okay. With a lot of thread, because I want to avoid snow shoveling totally, because I have some serious chronic back issues. So I'm wondering if this vehicle, if the snowplow comes by and puts up 2 feet of snow up against it, would I be able to get out, or do I need to get out and shovel? And also your opinion on this vehicle, and again, the motor.
The Jeep Wrangler.
Well, I'll tell you what, I admire your willingness to not want to shovel and drive over the snow. I'm a fan of that type of behavior. I got to be honest, it really comes down to how much damage you're willing to incur on your vehicle. Now, a Jeep should have sufficient clearance, of course, depending on the height of the snow and the texture. If it's like a rock and it's icy, you might not want to go through it. But a Jeep of that caliber should be able to overcome most of the snow that you're trying to get over. If you're never going to shovel, it's going to accumulate over a certain time. I'm not sure if you're talking about on the street or in a driveway.
On the street.
On the street. So, okay. So it gets cleared fairly regularly. You should be okay to get away with most of it, you know, obviously barring any huge dumping of snow. In terms of that Jeep itself, I got to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of the newer Jeep products. We do see a lot of issues with the drivetrain and with the engines themselves. In that category of vehicle, you don't have a ton of choices, mind you.
Yeah.
I will always toot Toyota's horn just because I'm biased. But if there's a Toyota option that you might want to exercise for around the same price point, maybe a Tacoma or a 4Runner. But you're going to be paying quite heavily with the fuel consumption on these batteries.
Okay, so the 4Runner would be just as high as the Jeep Wrangler.
Depending on the option package, yeah, it'd be very similar.
Yeah, I'm looking at height. And would there be custom shops where I can get, like, customize the shocks or the struts that it would I could lift it up another 2 or 3
inches? Absolutely.
The
sky is the limit. You're only limited by how much money you have to invest in it. But there's a huge aftermarket to support any modifications to the Toyotas or the Jeeps or any of those vehicles. So this way
I would have like maybe another 2 or 3 inches to bring it up to get out of this pile of snow.
I would recommend looking into a solid skid plate for the underside because that's really what's going to absorb. So, you know, even more so than trying to gain extra height, get a skid plate underneath there.
Okay, and those would be custom shops that do that, eh?
Well, there's a lot of off-the-shelf stuff that you can buy. Like I said, there's a lot of people off-roading these vehicles, so you're in good company.
Yeah, and what do you think about that 3.6 Pentastar motor, I believe it's called?
Well, I'll tell you what, it replaces the old inline six, which was bulletproof. The newer ones, they have similar performance figures. I know that they have some issues with the valve train on them. You'll have to check the specific years. I am not a huge fan, again, simply because they're not as reliable as they used to be. But then again, what is? So, you know, it comes down to that sort of thing. But, you know, I will answer my own question. What is still reliable? The Toyotas.
Hey, George, we got to run because we're up against news, but good luck with that.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a good day, guys.
All right, appreciate that call. 514-790-0800. We got some people waiting to talk to Chad. You can call, too, at 514-790-0800. Gus, you're up next.
You're listening to The Car Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Play the Florida Georgia line for everyone going over to day two of Lasso over at Parc Jean-Drapeau today. Having a good time there. Right back to the phone at 514-790-0800. This is Gus. Good morning, Gus.
Yeah, hi. The guy that called in for the solar panels for his car, why doesn't he call Robert Transport and ask for the maintenance or fleet department because they have their trucks with solar panels installed on them. They may be able to give him a helping hand.
Well, there you go. You're full of information there, Gus.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And
I hope he's listening.
I'm sorry?
I hope he's listening.
Well, I hope so, too. And if that doesn't work, he can also get a hold of the truck manufacturing companies that build the trucks to client specifications, and obviously they're able to also help him because, you know, if they build the cab to customer specification and the customer asks for solar panels, you know, they put them in.
Yeah, very good. Well, I hope he's listening and he hears that. Gus, what about your Honda?
Oh, runs like a charm.
Oh, so you weren't calling in with an issue?
No, I got no issue at all. The guy with the solar panel.
Because it says here, Honda Civic 2003.
Yeah. Goes like a charm.
All right.
Clean as a gem.
As those Hondas do.
Yeah.
No problem whatsoever.
They're reliable, eh?
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Gus.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye.
Frees up a line at 514-790-0800 here on The Car Show from the text line, chat, if you don't mind. I recently bought a 2007 Mustang GT. 30,000 kilometers, which was never winter driven. Transmission fluid has never been changed. Would you recommend changing it on a 15-year-old car? Thanks. That's Joe.
He didn't mention the mileage on it, did he?
30,000.
Yeah. So if that is the case, then I think at this point it hasn't been used too hard. I would recommend doing a transmission fluid change. It should not be detrimental to the vehicle. Oftentimes when they get older and they have a lot more wear on them, changing the transmission fluid can have an effect, less nowadays than they used to. But if you're planning on keeping this thing for a long time, it's money well spent. The fluid will degrade over a certain period of time. Why not go ahead and treat yourself to a nice transmission flush?
There you go. Another one for you, Chad. Good morning. Peter here. I have a 2008 F-150 with the 5.4 liter engine and with 197 kilometers mileage. I replaced the spark plugs at 100K. What is the recommended change out? I know the 5.4 was notorious for breaking spark plugs in the head. However, it's been done successfully at 100K. So just curious to get your advice. Thank you.
I'm going to plead ignorance on the exact interval on this one. I do believe it is somewhere around 140,000, something to that effect. You could check the manual. Yes, these vehicles are notorious. They are nightmares for the spark plugs getting seized inside the heads, and it's quite a task, and oftentimes you even end up having to disassemble the motor as a result. But if you did it at 100,000K and they put some anti-seize on the threads, which I hope you might be successful in getting it done without too much trouble. With the price of spark plugs, they're not that expensive. If it's even a question for you and you're even half handy, it's an easy job, I would say go ahead. But if you feel too much resistance when you're trying to pull those off, then you might want to hold off and take it to a shop and have them work their magic and get some penetrant in there and let it sit overnight at least.
There you go. Peter, thank you for that. Hope that was some help. 514-790-0800 to call in for the car show. Lisa's off. Chad is in. It says here, good morning, guys. Can you explain how a dual clutch transmission is able to creep forward when you let go of the brakes and not accelerating? It seems like odd behavior. That's from Anthony and Ajum.
They actually are designed to have a creep forward function. A lot of it has to do with the software that regulates the transmission. But ultimately, it comes down to the same principles as a regular clutch. There's slippage that occurs. So it's partial engagement, and it gives you just enough to creep forward. Now, on DCTs, depending on the models, too much stop-and-go traffic can actually put some serious wear on them. They're not happy when they are crawling and slipping as much as, say, a traditional one. So they're designed to do that, so because there's no point in having a transmission that's either on or off unless it's like a racing vehicle. Not so great in regular traffic. But absolutely, they're designed to do that. So if you can limit it, if it's in your power, try to avoid those scenarios.
Another one from the text line at 514-800, Chad. Should I buy an extended warranty for an Audi 2018? If yes, should I buy from Audi or from a private, if you can recommend something?
I would always recommend, provided it's not a crazy, silly price that they're trying to charge, especially on the Audis of those years, actually pretty much any year. Extended warranty on the drivetrain and the powertrain, absolutely a good idea. You'll never regret it. I would be willing to bet that it's going to come in handy at some point, depending on how long you keep it. But they are quite pricey to maintain and to repair. So, if you have to put out $2,000-$3,000 or something for an extended warranty, it'll probably pay for itself over the period of about 5 years or so. Hopefully not, but likely.
One more for you before we go back to the phones. What's the worst case scenario for a radiator leak? The damage that it can cause.
Well, it can cause your car to overheat and essentially scrap the motor. You really need to keep, if you have a slow leak or some kind of leakage occurring, you really need to keep an eye on the level. Don't let it get low. Keep your eye on the temperature gauge, or if you don't have a gauge, be wary of any warning lights that come on the dash, because overheating is a great way to ruin your engine completely.
Four from the text line. Thank you for taking care of those, Chad. Robert, good morning.
Good morning.
Ford Ranger 07, is that it?
That's right.
What do you want to talk about?
Okay, the problem is I've had this many years, and this problem only happens sporadically in the summer, never in winter. I will start the vehicle, not a cold start, when it's been warmed up a little bit. I start it, all of a sudden I had no idle.
Okay.
And I'll go a couple of kilometers and then whoop, and then it corrects itself. Sometimes I have to go miles and miles before it corrects itself. The check engine light never comes on. I've had it at the dealer, the scanner. Nobody can ever find the problem. I bought a little code reader and just to see, but it never gives a code. And one time it was rough idle. I put it on, and it passed all the tests. The oxygen sensor, evap, everything passed, and it had no idle. Nobody can ever find it, and it's only in the summer.
So one good place to start looking would be the throttle body itself. The throttle body has little bypasses for the idle air controller. It may even have a separate idle air control module, but I believe it's built into the throttle body itself. And if they're not cleaned and maintained, you get like kind of like a gummy tar that can form around the perimeter of the butterfly for the throttle itself.
Right.
And that can actually block the flow that it was anticipating to have and then give you that type of symptom. Now, the significance of the temperature being summer or winter, that's a good question. That's something that I can't really speak to. But if nobody has checked the throttle body, that's a very good place and cheap place to start. There's also if you need to purchase a new throttle body, which may ultimately be the case, they're usually about $600-$700, I believe, for something of that model. You'll have to get it programmed after and calibrated as well.
But like I said, I don't understand it. It runs perfect. I'll shut the engine and the ignition. Mm-hmm. I'll start it right away. I got no idle.
Mm-hmm. It could be a calibration issue with it, and you won't necessarily get a check engine light for that. We're talking like fractions of a millimeter here. So if it's especially with an older vehicle that wasn't perhaps as sophisticated as the ones that are out there today, all it would take, it would be something like that. So cheap fix, get some brake cleaner, get an old toothbrush, and get that thing cleaned out, and see if the symptoms persist. If they do, see if you can get that throttle body calibrated, and that may be a solution or a potential solution to your problem.
Yeah. Okay, then.
Hey,
good
Rob,
luck.
Thanks for the call.
The Car Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Mm-hmm. It's Ken in for Lisa on this magic carpet ride that's known as the Car Show. 10:51, Chad Kennemy is a mechanic. Well, you know, he's got all these. How many years of experience did you have as a mechanic?
25.
25.
At least. I stopped counting.
Did you get a watch?
Let's not go there.
514. He's a regular fill-in here when Lisa needs a day off, like she did today. 514-790-0800. Let's go back to the phone and say hi to Lewis is waiting. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, how are you guys?
Oh, we're good. Come to the phone, please.
I'm right here.
Oh, but you sound
right there. Is that better?
That much better.
Oh,
yeah,
okay, great. Super.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Listen, my question is the following. We drive about 11,000 kilometers per year, mostly city. And I'm thinking of buying a new vehicle, and my question to you is from a preference standpoint, given, you know, that particular type of, you know, situation, would it be better an ICE, a plug-in, or a hybrid?
Hmm.
If you can get away with the plug-in and you're not doing long distances, you're just putting around the city, that is the future. That is the way to save fuel. That is the way to save everything. As far as I'm concerned, the sooner people are able and can afford to move to either a plug-in or a full electric vehicle, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I can't wait to get myself into something electric. It really comes down to you know, the distances that you're able to achieve. But if you're saying it's just in the city, I don't see why you wouldn't be able to at least go to a plug-in. I mean, a hybrid is obviously a better option than a full internal combustion engine setup. It's a step in the right direction. A plug-in hybrid gives you more autonomy. You can go a little bit further, but if you can go full EV, why not?
Okay, and a hybrid would be, I guess, would be number two, right? I mean, the least would be a regular vehicle, if you wish, a regular combustion engine.
Correct.
And I guess hybrid, and then you're saying a plug-in would be...
Because you can have a plug-in hybrid as well. A plug-in doesn't necessarily mean full EV. Plug-in hybrid, it still acts as a hybrid.
Correct.
It's just got a bigger battery. So, I mean, a plug-in will give you more distance, more ability to go without using the fuel. So that's a great option, especially if you're in the city, because the stop and go, there's a lot of savings to be had just not wearing your brakes because you're using your electric motor.
And as a mechanic, I guess you've already worked on, say, hybrids versus regular, and which one is more complex?
it really depends. There's such a plethora of options out there. I mean, the complexity varies from model to model. My go-to for people who are just getting into the hybrid world is a Prius. Again, I'm tooting Toyota's horn. They are not paying me for this, by the way.
Well, actually, I've been driving Toyotas, and another question that I had, which I forgot to ask you, was which model or which make would you suggest? And I guess you're going Toyota route, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe there's even an all-wheel drive Prius. I don't know if they have the plug-in option on that one, but that's a very attractive option. And honestly, that's a good starting place. They're solid. A lot of other companies actually borrow or pay to have the rights for their technology. And it's the same setup that they use in a lot of the Lexuses and all that sort of thing, too. So,
Lewis, I was just curious because I'm thinking of going that route, too, maybe next year. What have you snooped around? What have you seen that you liked?
Actually, I'm looking at a RAV4. Okay, and you know, between the RAV4, let's say a plug-in, I really dislike the plug-ins, to be honest with you. I just am uncomfortable with the idea of, I guess two things. One is the fact of plugging it in and the discipline of having to plug it in. It's like everything else. You're seemingly plugging in everything today, your phone, your tablet, and so on and so forth. So that's one thing.
Where's my charger?
Yeah. And the second thing, too, is that, you know, down the road, I guess the question that I have is that, you know, we basically run a hydroelectric power here in Quebec, so everything is fine and dandy. But, you know, you take a look at the city of Montreal, I have no idea how people are going to be able to charge all these vehicles. So, you know, I kind of see at a point in time where we're going to have problems with the distribution.
Charging infrastructure is a big limiting factor when it comes to electric vehicles at the moment, especially if you have an apartment, you don't have a place to plug it in. And even if you do, you got to pay for the installation of the charging port. These are all considerations that you got to, calculate and figure out what works.
The only thing that scares me is this famous, or not scares me, but say worries me, is this famous 2035, where they're going to stop supposedly they're going to stop the sale of combustion engines here in Canada. So I don't know how solid that is, or if it's just, you know, rhetoric, but then what's the value of an ICE car after 2035? You know what I mean? So that's
very good question. Maybe they'll become vintage and it'll become a niche.
Yeah, I hope so.
Lewis, happy shopping.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. It's coming up on 10:56 again from the text line here. It's not really a question, just boasting about their Honda. We're gonna have some Honda love here.
I love it.
I have a Honda Civic Coupe, standard shift, 75,000 miles, and not a spot of rust. Spins like a top. Always have notes on my windshield if I want to sell it to call them.
One of them was probably from me. Very envious.
Says no. That's from Lisa. No way will I sell that car. We've driven Hondas as well. My wife and I in the past. They're very reliable.
Absolutely.
Cars. All right. What else can I throw out to you before I let you go so we get our money's worth? It's about 4 minutes to 11 o'clock. 514-790-0800. Give me some advice of squeaky or grinding brakes. It's brake pads, right?
Yeah, most of the time it's brake pads. It could be parking brake, too. There's also the famous backing plate on the brakes. Sometimes people will just go get their tires changed or rotated, and somebody accidentally clips. There's a little aluminum plate or a metal plate behind it that's easy to bend. And then they leave, and all of a sudden they got this squeaking noise. It sounds terrible, but it's nothing more complicated than just a little piece of aluminum or metal that has to be bent out of shape. I've seen that more than once. But generally speaking, if you're getting squeaking, it's a clear indication it's time to at least have something checked. You don't mess around with brakes.
Worn brakes, I guess, are just a sign of a bit of negligence when it comes to your car maintenance, right?
Negligence, a lot of use. People are busy these days, Ken. Right. They don't have time to look at that.
I know. Hey, get in line. One last one. You know what? Just as a follow-up, and I have no memory, so I'm going to ask you. It says, I want to say thank you for answering my question about the Audi 2018, but did you say private or Audi? The question.
Well, both will offer, I'm assuming both will offer the extended warranty package. It comes down to, I mean, if you're doing it privately, you're going to have to probably seek your own aftermarket warranty company. There's a bunch of them out there. You'll have to just shop around and see which one is best for you. But I mean, if you're getting it from the dealer, they tend to be a little on the pricier side, but they can also cover a little bit more as well. They're a little more comprehensive. So you really got to read the fine print when it comes to that sort of thing.
Chad, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We put that sign up in the sky like Batman, and we call for Chad. It's a big C.
I am there.
And he answered. A great hour. Chad Kennedy, thank you very much. It's Ken Connor. He's been sitting in here just riding shotgun. Chad was in for Lisa Christensen, who was off today. Thank you. Have a great morning. And I'm going to step aside here. And thanks, Jimmy G, behind the board the entire morning. He's sticking around for another hour. And you know what? We'll talk to you again tomorrow morning as of 6 o'clock on Weekends with Ken.